Hello and welcome to the Bucket List Gamers podcast. I am Jay and once again I am joined by Eddie.
Hello.
And I might sound in a chipper mood, but I assure you I am not, because this week we are looking at one of the three games left on the list. The one we've already mentioned we completely forgot was on there and probably should have covered with something else, which is Turrican 2, which came out in 1991 for various consoles, platforms, whatever you want to call it. And it is number 81 on the list. And I don't know how. I mean, 81, it's low end, so that makes sense. But how it's on the list at all would be my question. I mean, I don't know if you've had chance to play it. It is sort of available to play on the internet. I actually found out this week that I owned it when I was younger. I say I owned it in the loosest sense of the word because it was on one of those compilation PC gaming discs that were definitely not legal. And I think it had like Doom, Earthworm Jim, Turrican 2 and about 20 other games. And I vividly remember after playing it again, installing it on my PC, playing it for 10 minutes and immediately uninstalling it, even though I didn't really need the space. So that was the impression it had left on me back in the day. Did you manage to get your hands on it and give it a go?
No, it's not something I've played before, and looking at some of the screenshots and looking at some of the gameplay, there's a very good reason for that. I do know that it was re-released on the PS4 and the Switch under, I think it was called Turrican Flashback, and it's essentially just a reskin of this game, and it was to celebrate the 30th anniversary of the game, and I think celebrate is probably a bit of a generous word, really.
That's up there with Vietnam flashbacks, that. I mean, it's not one you particularly relish having, based on my experience playing it. It's a weird one, because it looks quite nice, I'd say, for a game from 1991, especially the PC version, which I had. It looks quite nice. The animation is quite crisp, and the movement of the main character is far more detailed than it needs to be. Like when he moves and he shoots and stuff, his head will turn towards and away from the screen, which isn't necessary. So it's strange that they went that extra mile. And to be fair to it, it doesn't control badly either. Like the jumping's pretty tight, the shooting's very responsive. But I think the problem with it is, one, it's incredibly difficult, which games back then sort of were, but this is off the charts difficult. I mean, you have no iframes, so as soon as an enemy touches you, your health starts draining and doesn't stop until it's not touching you anymore. There's a lot of enemies that are a lot faster than you are and have very erratic movement patterns, even in the first level. And unlike the game that it is blatantly, well, I don't know if it's a rip-off of, but it must be highly influenced by, in Contra, you don't have the ability to aim your weapon. It just shoots forward. Unless I'm missing some sort of controls, and I don't think I am, the gun shoots forward whichever way you're pointing. So if you want to shoot an enemy that's up in the air, you can't, like in Contra, aim upwards or aim diagonally. You literally have to jump and shoot it, which, yeah, that's fine. In a lot of games, that works. But in this one, because there's so many things coming after you at once and they move all over the screen, it is quite hard to get used to that. And what I found was quite a weird one as well is that you can jump on some enemies to kill them as well, but not others. So certain enemies you can jump on, other enemies you jump on them and you will just, your health will drain to nothing because you stood on an enemy. So it's got some strange choices in how it works, I would say. And it just, I mean, I played it for about an hour and I didn't get past the first level. And I know that's probably partly on me, but it is just very, very difficult, or very easy to die, should I say. You make one wrong move and it will just drain your whole health. You don't get knocked back and then you can come again or anything like that. You literally, your health goes from here to nothing as long as that enemy is touching you. And it's that, I think that's what makes it so tricky.
Yeah, it, to me, it strikes of all the worst parts of Metroid, crossed with the graphics of R-Type, because R-Type was quite a pretty game. This is quite a pretty game for what it is. And Contra. So it's literally, and put a little bit of Mega Man in there with the cap-handed aiming system and the erratic moving enemies. And it's like someone went, oh, let's take all the shit bits that nobody really likes or that really grates up against the nerves of all these well-respected gaming franchises and make a game out of them. And it just comes off as incredibly painful to play. And I mean, it is pretty. But that's about the nicest thing I can say about it, unless you like really ridiculously challenging video games.
Yeah, like we've said before, it comes from an era where games were more difficult. The longevity of a game was prolonged by how hard it is. So you can sort of forgive on that a little bit, but I think this just goes too far. There's a lot of periods in the game, especially, well, the first level that I played, where you are literally better off just sprinting past everything rather than trying to fight things, because you'll take a little bit of damage jumping through the enemies, but if you stand and try and fight, you will probably die. And you get like a screen nuke, and I've never been so happy to have that at my disposal in certain scenes, because like you said with Mega Man, the erratic enemies, one thing I will say for Turrican is the enemies don't respawn, as far as I could tell, which is great, but they also throw about 10 times more enemies on each screen than Mega Man does. So even though they don't come back, they just overwhelm you immediately as soon as you walk into the next environment. And they're quick as well. They're not slow enemies. They come at you faster than you can shoot them a lot of the time. So a lot of the time you'll find yourself shooting at an enemy and thinking, I'm not going to kill it before it gets to me, and then having to run backwards and turn around and shoot it again. At which point its mate's caught up with it, and then you've got two of them to try and deal with in the same... And it just goes like that. So I agree, it's an okay game, I would say. Like, if I'd have got it in 1991, probably would have played it a fair bit and tried to get good at it. But I think we're looking at probably closer to like 1998 when I got it, and they were just better things to play by that point. And then today, no, it's not a bucket list game for me, to quote the name of the podcast and the whole point of the thing. The reason we started doing this, if you were to play a game of this type, you would play Contra.
Yeah.
Or one of the many Contra games that refined it down to an art form. I mean, I've not played Turrican 1, but I can't even get my head around what they may have improved in this.
I mean, if this is an improvement over the first one must have been essentially a stick man that spawned you in the middle of the screen and then killed you if you didn't press anything quick enough. I think I would rather play Contra Rogue Core, which was the last Contra released for the PS4, than play this.
And is that the one with
something, because the panda?
Oh, is that the one with the panda in it? Yeah, and it's like it's almost a roguelike bullet hell, isn't it? But it's just not good. Yeah, that is saying something. If you're willing to give that a go over this. And it's hard to be that harsh on it, because as I've said, it's of its time, it looks nice. It really does look nice. The title screen looks good. The characters look good. All the models. The environments are really vibrant, which a lot of the time you sort of lose in games like this. So I think it has got stuff going for it. It's a hard one to criticise because, like I said, it controls quite well. So you can't say it controls horribly, unlike something we're going to be talking about in a bit. You can't say it controls terribly. You can't say that it is clunky to an extent, but it's not. You do feel like you're very in control of that character. You just don't feel like the character itself is agile enough to do what you want it to do. And I honestly think it could have been 100 times better game if you could just aim your weapon in a sort of circle around you like you can in Contra, because that would just change it. So, and maybe you can, and I'm an idiot and I've not found the buttons to do that, but it wasn't immediately obvious, because you'd think you'd press up and it'd angle your gun, but up jumps. So I don't think there is a way to do it, which is a shame, because it's got the elements of a really good game, I think. But like I say, you just wouldn't ever, if you were struggling for time and you had to play 100 games, pick this over a Contra or a Metroid or the other games that you mentioned that it seems to take bits from.
Yeah, and the thing that I struggle with, really, is that they reskinned it for Universal Soldier.
Hmm.
So essentially they did a reskin of Turrican as a movie spin-off to the Dolph Lundgren Universal Soldier film instead of reskinning Contra.
Yeah,
that's what really confuses me. So essentially, the little man that you play in this game, they essentially reskinned to look as near as you can get to Dolph Lundgren with horrible 16-bit pixels, and then they replaced the levels with like a jungle level so that it reflected the film, that sort of thing. But it just confuses me that they went, oh yeah, this is the game that we want to reskin to do it.
You've got to think that they must have gone for Contra. And it is Konami, isn't it, that did Contra, because it's got the Konami code in it. You've got to think that they went, no, and then this was the alternative. Because, like you say, that game is... Contra is basically an Arnold Schwarzenegger film, isn't it? Or a Sylvester Stallone film in game form with slightly modified characters. So it fits that perfectly. And yeah, to go for this one instead just makes no sense unless you've been rebuffed by your first and maybe even second choice. I mean, that's the only fact that the Retro Gamer magazine gives us about Turrican 2 is that it was reskinned for the Dolph Lundgren one, which I assume is a slightly better game than this. So why that one's not in the list and Turrican 2 is? I mean, as movie tie-ins go, I assume that was on the better side of the scale, because at least it was a competent game that played. So if you love Turrican 2, you think you'd like that even more, because it's got, I suppose, a few little upgrades, at least in visual style and licensing. But yeah, it's not great. As you can tell, we're like, what, 12 minutes in? Already struggling. I don't know if you've heard the jangling of the glass, but I am actually having to have a drink for this episode because I knew it was not going to go well. But we do have something else to talk about after Turrican 2. I mean, I've run dry on Turrican 2 already. I don't know about you.
Yeah, you can't even talk about the different weapons, really, because there aren't any. You sort of get a shield and you get the equivalent of a morph ball power-up. It's just like a little wheel that allows you to get into tight, hard-to-reach places, which I'm not sure how that was translated into the Dolph Lundgren one, because last time I checked, Universal Soldier, he didn't curl up into a little ball and cartwheel his way through the forest. So I'd love to know how they translated that across.
That must have been like air vents and you crawl through them or something. It's the only,
must have been.
The only option. But then why would that be a power-up? That is a bit of a strange one. In terms of a score, let's get it out of the way, because as I said, we do have something else to discuss. I'm not going to lull you into a false sense of security and make you think it's going to be any better than this. But we do have something else to discuss, which if you follow our Facebook page, you've probably figured out what it is by now. But before we get onto that, Turrican 2, let's get it in the book, and then we're down to two, and there are two that we can talk about a lot more in depth than this. And we're nearly there, and we can then decide whether we want to do PlayStation, we want to do Nintendo, we want to do a mix, we want to not do these bloody books anymore, we want to stop the podcast. These are the choices we can make in like two episodes time. For Turrican, though, I can't give it more than like a, I don't know, 60 even feels generous, because I wouldn't play it.
I'd play this over Deus Ex.
Yeah, oh yeah. That's
'cause stuff
that's
happens.
Not up for debate. Yeah, that's definitely up for debate. We gave that a 50, so it's got to be above a 50. That doesn't set the benchmark particularly high for it.
No, but very similar to Deus Ex, I struggle to grade it with, because it doesn't evoke any sort of feelings of anger or resentment or even, ooh, that's quite nifty. It's just, it's a game. And it's one of those that I wouldn't care about, really.
If I put myself in the mindset of, how old would I have been then? 6-ish when it came out, 5 or 6. If I put myself in the mindset of little 5-year-old me, and I'd received this game as a present or something when we didn't get many games, and I had to play this game because I had nothing else new to play, I think it would have frustrated the hell out of me, because it's not one of those games, or it didn't feel to me like one of those games where you can truly get really good at it. I think you can get better at it and you can figure out what enemies are worth killing and what enemies are worth avoiding and the fastest routes to get through a level without encountering too many enemies. But I don't ever feel like it's one of those games where you just go, yeah, I've got it now.
Yeah, it reminds me of Ghouls and Goblins.
Yeah,
in that respect,
yeah.
I've never seen someone do a run of Ghouls and Goblins and not get hit.
No. Slight tangent, but we're definitely going to need it in this episode. It's on the little handheld that I bought. So, is it called a Super Mega or something? I sent you the video, didn't I? Because I've actually recorded a video for YouTube, but I've not actually had a chance to get it up yet. That sounded wrong, but I will soldier on regardless. And it's a little handheld console that plays... it's a Capcom one that I got, so it plays X amount of Capcom games built in, and then you can put Evercade cartridges into it. And one of the games that's built into it is, I don't think it's Ghouls and Ghosts. It's whatever it was called when it was in the arcade. It had a few names, didn't it? It was like Ghosts and Goblins, yeah. Ghouls and Ghosts. It's whatever it was when it was in the arcade, so it looks beautiful. It's the really nice, attractive arcade version. But yeah, I spent about 2 hours playing it the other day and didn't really get past the first level. I got all the different weapons and tried to figure... And again, there is an element of you can get better at it in terms of you can figure out what weapons work best against what enemies, what weapons suit your playstyle best, where all the power-ups drop, and that kind of thing. But you're right, that game just spams enemies at you, and it's one of those, like Mega Man, you kill one and another one just pops up in its place, and it is impossible. I don't think anyone could ever do that game without getting hit. There's just getting a no-hit run on that would be impossible, I would think. If there's somebody out there that has, drop us a message and let us know who, because I just don't think it's possible. Especially in the bosses. The bosses, some of them, you just have to take a hit. There's just no way around it. And this feels similar to that in that you're never going to go start to finish on a level on this without some little sneaky enemy getting a clip on you or five or six of them running at you all at one time and there's just nothing you can do. It is one of those games that if I was that age, I would keep playing it because I'd have nothing better to do. But at the same time, I'd just get so annoyed with it. So with what you were saying about not having any feelings towards it, I agree now. But if I put myself in the shoes of... Oh, yeah. The kid back then, I would have hated this. I'm looking at, what, 55? 57?
I think 55's fair.
It's not the lowest on the list by any stretch of the imagination. It, as you said, it beat Deus Ex, which is no mean feat, given how many people love that game. But there you go. Turrican 2, in at 55, and we're down to 2, which I won't reveal. I'm sure you can, if you really put your mind to it, figure out what one of them is based on what we've not talked about yet. But the other one, I suppose it. I won't reveal anything, I won't give anything away, but I can see why the other one's in there as well. Upcoming 2 episodes should be fun, now we've got that out of the way. But I hear you ask, what are we going to do for the next, I don't know, 30, 40 minutes, depending on how long we want this to run for? Well, as I alluded to earlier on, we've been playing a different game this week between the two of us, separately. And we don't know what the other one thinks of it because we've not had a discussion yet. And we were going to do this for a downloadable content episode, but then realised we really, really needed content for this episode. So we brought it forward and we have been playing Bluey, which sounds borderline wrong that two near 40-year-olds have been playing a kid's game. And I don't just mean like a kid's game, I mean a kid's game. This is like designed for toddlers, isn't it? Yeah, we decided to play. For those who aren't familiar with why we're playing this, it became a bit of a running joke because it came out and it was incredibly bad, wasn't it? It was bugged to all hell. Kids weren't enjoying it because it was like a fever dream. There was multiple characters of the same person on screen at once and it was phasing in and out of platforms and all that. And we found that quite funny. And then it came on Game Pass for free. And it was sort of like, well, it'd be rude not to give it a go. And then, for some reason, we both started getting bombarded with Facebook posts about Long Dogs and Bluey and God knows what. And I've never seen the cartoon, so going into this, I had no preconceptions about what Bluey is. I mean, I knew it was Australian, and I think that's about as much as I knew. I mean, it came as a shock to me to find out that Bluey was a girl, because I was convinced it was a boy, until they call her in the episode. So that came as a shock. And, yeah, it's... Well, I'm going to let you go first, and then I'll give my thoughts on this game, because I've played it to completion, I'm sad to say. And I'd also like to point out that I played it to completion on a dinner hour. So that gives you scope of how long this game actually is.
Yeah, that's my biggest gripe with it, but I will get to that. I, like you, I thought Bluey was a boy. I thought Bluey was the dad. To be quite fair, because the dad's blue, and I was like, "Oh yeah, that makes sense." And then within the first 2 minutes of playing the game, I think the mum says, "Come on, girls," you the Bluey and her sibling, and I was like, "Bingo, oh, yeah. it's a girl, and so's the other one." Fair enough. So that threw me. I have seen bits of the program. I've got friends who've got kids, and I've got nephews, nieces, that sort of thing, and they are like 3, 4. They're not grown-ass adults. So I have, when I've gone round to see cousins or friends and stuff like that, it's been on in the background. And to be honest with you, the show is quite wholesome. It's quite nice. It is good for kids. It's good for the adults as well. There used to be cartoons like Count Duckula and Danger Mouse and stuff like that from when we were young. There was a level of humour aimed at kids. And then there was a level of joke that would make a kid laugh, but then there was a subtle adult undertone to the joke that the adults in the room would also get a bit of a giggle out of. It was usually something rude or something perverse that had no rights being in a kid's show, but it got a laugh out of everyone in the room. This is sort of the same. There are a lot of adult themes in Bluey. I think there's one about fertility and how one of the dogs can't have a baby. And aiming that at like 3-year-olds, the subject matter is dealt with super sensitively. And it does it in a way that the kids would understand and appreciate on some level what was going on and the implications of it and stuff like that. So it's one of the better things to come out of Australia, really, because
that's a loaded statement.
In terms of entertainment, because a lot of it is sort of soap operas that a lot of people will know. It's like Neighbours, Home and Away, and it's just meh.
I'll give you that. I thought you were launching a scathing attack on our Australian cousins. Fair enough. In terms of entertainment, it's Dross Soaps and Dame
it's
Edna.
Dross Soaps.
And we don't really get anything else.
It's unlike America. Considering how close our ties are with Australia, nation to nation, it's unusual how little of their cultural exports actually make it over here and actually ingrain in culture. I mean, everyone knows Neighbours, everyone knows Home and Away, that sort of thing, but that sort of starts and ends there. The one thing surprised me about the video game of Bluey is that it wasn't made by an Australian company. It wasn't made by an Australian gaming company. They've literally outsourced it to a Spanish game developer. And I was a bit like, why? I'm pretty sure that the studio that runs Bluey could have afforded, with the amount of bloody episodes that there are, would have been able to do it sort of in-house, or at least do it in Australia with an associated gaming company. I mean, it's the original cast. They all do their original sort of voice acting. And I will say this, the artwork and the graphics in the game are very, very close to the TV show. And it's got a nice, homely feel to it. It's animated quite well, despite the glitches when it first came out. All the characters sort of animate quite well, to an extent.
I'd preface that with, for the most part.
Yes.
Because that is something I was going to talk about. But yeah, I know what you mean. It looks like the TV show, for the most part. Yeah. It mirrors it very well. It sounds like it very well. From what I understand, it's written in the same style and humour, so that connects as well. And to your point, there's probably going to be Bluey game spoilers in here. So if you're 3 to 4 years old and you plan on playing this game, turn off now. Otherwise, you're probably all right. There's one bit in it in particular that really got me as the whole, this is for kids, but actually this is for adults, this bit. When in, I think, the third chapter, their uncle gives them a toy that never shuts up. And the parents basically say, oh, they've already had one of them and we've had to hide it in a cupboard because we're sick of hearing it. And then the whole episode, because it's broken up into 4 episodes, isn't it? Like the TV show. The whole episode is about how irritating this toy is that won't shut up and the parents just losing their rag with it. And I think that is obviously a lot more relatable to parents than it is to the kids. The kids will still get a laugh out of it because, oh, it's being silly and it's annoying. But the adults will connect with that so well that you can tell that's in there for them because they're obviously going to be playing this with whoever's playing the game. So I think that aspect of it is done really well. It's like you say, it's homely. Like the music that's in the background is really endearing as well. It's only like 6 or 7 bars repeated, But it just, it feels really nice and cozy, doesn't it, when you play in it? And I think that's one of the really good things about it. The writing, the sort of cozy atmosphere, the similarity to the TV show in the way the house is done and laid out, and it'll feel familiar to kids playing it. I mean, we should have said at the start of this, and I'll say it now, obviously we're not the target market for this game. So our opinions on a lot of the game, as us, are irrelevant because it's not for us. But trying to look at it through the eyes of a child who likes the TV show and playing it, yes, I think that's great. I think that's a really good thing. Some of the things maybe that are not so good. Kids have got a short attention span. I mean, I've got a short attention span, but kids are just that to the nth degree, aren't they? If something's not holding their attention, they're going to just forget about it and move on to the next thing. This game, I would say, really struggles with that because it, at its heart, it is a collectathon and a fetch quest engine, isn't it? That's the only two real mechanics. There's a couple of what they're trying to claim are mini games, but let's be fair, they're not mini games. Yeah. They are terrible. But yeah, it's a collectathon and it is a go here and fetch this or go here and do that game, which is fine for that age group, I think. That's probably what it needs to be. There's little bits of platforming in it, but they don't really matter. If you miss a platform, you just end up back on the platform you fell off of and you start again. So there are little bits of platforming to it. But the problem with the collecting side of it is you're collecting stickers and such around the various locations. Every time you collect a sticker, it plays this exact same soundbite of the mum congratulating you. Then it opens the sticker album, which takes a couple of seconds. Then it takes an absolute bloody age for the sticker to like fill in and go into colour that you found. Then there's another couple of seconds that is unexplainable as to why nothing's happening. And then you can exit back out of the book. And then it takes that to the nth degree with certain stickers where you have to find three of them before you get the sticker. And then it shows you collecting that sticker. Then it shows it revealing what's underneath it. Then it freezes up almost completely for a couple more seconds and then lets you back out. So every time you find one of these stickers, it's a good 30 seconds, isn't it? Where you're completely out of the game. You can't do anything. Then every time you collect a sticker, you get stars, which unlock hats. Which is a whole other thing because they look abysmal. That is one of the areas that it genuinely looks awful. Like they've literally just drawn a hat over the top. They've made no effort to make it look like they're wearing this item. But every, I'd say, probably three stickers, it also unlocks a hat. So you get the 30 seconds of the sticker, then you exit out of that, then it cuts you out of the game completely to tell you you've unlocked a new hat, which then takes about a minute because they all stand there dancing like loons with the new hat on. Before it will then let you get back into the game. So you're constantly being broken up from doing what you want to do. And it's not necessary. They could have just let you get the sticker and it go added to book in the top corner. And then you can go and look in the book when you want to see what stickers you've got. And it's that I think is the biggest fault of this game. And I mean, I'm getting really in depth and like contextual on a kid's game of Bluey. But I think that for a kid would probably make them lose interest really quickly because you're not doing anything. For large swathes of the game, you might get a minute's gameplay to like 4 or 5 minutes of downtime where you can't control the game.
Yeah, I think it's equal parts overly padded and too fucking short. Yeah. So God only knows how short this game would have been. So to your point, it takes roughly an hour to complete it. All four story beats, and then you get free roam afterwards and you can go around, you can find all of the animals that you've missed or collect all the stickers and what have you for 100% completion if you are that psychotic about it. But I can only imagine how short this game would have been had they cut out all the minute-long tossing about with hats on and unlocking of stickers and stuff like that. It would have been about 20 minutes.
And it's not even just that. It's the game itself does it. Like there's it does it a little bit in all of them, but the most heinous one is the creek level. So the storyline for those who haven't played it is the kids are on summer vacation and they find a treasure map that belonged to their dad while they're titting about in one of the bedrooms. It falls out of one of the boxes. and they decide that, oh, they're going to go on this treasure hunt, but the two uncles have got the other pieces of the map, so you have to go and see the uncles in two of the stages. You get the full map, and it takes you to this treasure that's buried in the creek. And the creek level is unbelievable in how it plays, because it's a walk from start to finish with a couple of little platforms and a bit of moving rocks about, isn't it? That's, oh, I'm picking up some litter at one point. But the basis is you walk from point A to point B following the granddad. But it's literally like you take two steps, you can see the next marker on the screen from where you are. You walk two steps and it does another cutscene where they're like, yeah, we're nearly there. Then you take another two steps and the granddad will utter something. But every time it does it, the little bars come down, don't they? Like a cutscene, and it does it. So it's not like it's just you following the dots and it's speaking to you while you're doing it. There's a good 10, 20 seconds each time you hit the edge of the screen where it's... And I just can't see kids putting up with that. Just do it as you're walking. Can you imagine if you were playing like GTA and literally every time you turned a corner, the car stopped and you got like 20 seconds of dialogue and then you had to take off again and start doing it. It's just bizarre. And like you say, it is padding for the sake of we've made this game and actually it looks really nice and it sounds great, but it plays in about 10 minutes and then you've nothing else to do.
It would, charitably speaking, be a single episode of Bluey in length.
Yeah.
And it would, but they've carved it up rather arbitrarily into episodic bite size. I mean, it's not even bite size, it's like fun size Snickers levels of bite size compared to a full size Twix. But then you get to the beach and there's fuck all that happens. It's just there. It's literally like they've gone and here's the beach, end of game, and you sort of go, what?
The only thing that happens at the beach is that you want to go and explore the beach and the mum is constantly going, I really want to look in that sticker album. I really want to look in that sticker album, like every 2 seconds until you go and look in the sticker album. And then she tells you there's nothing to do in there. And then you can go and explore again. And it just, I know we're being overly harsh to a kid's game, but it is just, it frustrated me to no end certain bits of it. Like the controls are both really tight and incredibly bad at the same time. Which I don't know how they've managed that, because in certain situations the jumping is really crisp, isn't it? And the you've got a little kick, a kick move that you never have to use, apart from, no, you don't even have to use it in the mini game where you have to kick things. But you've got this little kick where if you're in the house, most of the things they've done quite a good job of making most of the stuff in the house interactable in as much as you can pick it up and move it. Nothing does anything. So all the stuff that you want to be interactive isn't. Like there's a tap outside, and until you get a watering can, you can't do anything with that and stuff like that. But all the books, you can take literally every book off the bookshelf if you want and throw it on the ground and like boot it about and stuff, but it doesn't get you anything. But it's just when you're near an object like that, the control scheme just goes mental. So there's a sticker in it, which is a cake, and it's on the top shelf of a bookshelf. And I don't know how you get it. So I don't know how a four-year-old's meant to figure out how you get it, because you can climb onto your parent's shoulders. And I thought, oh, you climb on your dad's shoulders and walk over and then you can get it. Can't press the pickup button while you're on the parent's shoulders. So you can't do it like that. So then it's on a bookshelf. So I thought, oh, I've got to pull all the books off it and pile them up and jump on them. Can't do that because they all slip off each other like they're greased. And then as soon as you stand on it, your character just starts floating in midair and won't jump or move or do anything until it slides back to the floor. It's just really strange how it controls so well in certain parts and then in other parts it is nearly uncontrollable. And the prompt to like collect things is really iffy as well, isn't it? Like you can be stood on top of something and it won't give you the prompt to pick it up and you have to walk away and come back to get it to work.
Yeah, I think that is also compounded by the fact that the characters are two-dimensional. So they're essentially like paper cutouts, but fully animated paper cutouts. So it's not like the South Park thing where it's obviously layered paper stuck on top, so the head stuck on top of the body, and each bit is animated separately. It's all quite smooth animation of each character to an extent. But then the level is 2.5D, so it's got depth to it, which doesn't make sense in the sort of the universe in inverted commas of the cartoon, because the cartoon, everything's two-dimensional.
It's very Paper Mario, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
When you walk in and out of the foreground, but you are flat. You don't make anything of that. It's not like you can turn sideways and slip into little gaps or anything. But yeah, it's just a very, very odd. It's like it struggles to figure out where it wants to pitch itself.
Yeah.
Because 90% of it, even like a 3-year-old, I think would get bored of really quickly. But then there's certain bits in it where you go, why the hell are you meant to do that? And a 3-year-old definitely wouldn't be able to figure out how you're meant to do it and work it out. And I think that's another positive, I suppose, is that it's 4-player, isn't it, if you want it to be.
Yeah.
So you can have the parents controlling the parents and the kids controlling the kids, and you do help each other out in certain scenarios. And didn't realise till I got to the beach that the parents can literally pick up the kids and like yeet them across the screen, because there's something on top of an umbrella at the beach. I was like, how the hell did you get that? So I got on the shoulders, still couldn't reach, and I pressed the wrong button and he just launched me like across the screen. It's like, oh, that would have been nice to know about like 3 episodes ago when it didn't tell me I could do this. I found myself a little bit endeared by it, but I think we said just before we started recording, the only thing we really did discuss about it was, I think a lot of the charm of the game is just the charm of the TV show. It doesn't need to be a game. It's very much a you're playing through an episode of the TV show rather than it being a game.
Yeah, it sort of strikes me as it's got all the sort of substance of a McDonald's Happy Meal toy. It's based on the cartoon, so it's got no sort of depth at all. It is just a toy that represents an aspect of the cartoon, and that is essentially all this is. There is no real depth or substance to it outside of what is already available in the cartoon. It is, in the most charitable way, it is functional as a video game.
Yeah.
It is too hand-holdy because everything gets a bloody marker on the screen. You can turn them off.
Yeah.
But I can't see any 3-year-old who'd get into this game wanting to turn it off, because it's
sort of needed.
Yeah.
Like, because it'll just be, I mean, it tells you literally what to do anyway, doesn't it? It's like, oh, we need the rubber duck. It's in the bathroom. And then you just have to go and find the bathroom. But like you say, there's an arrow on the screen saying, go up these stairs, go that way.
Yeah.
There it is. It may as well just say, press X to go and get the duck, and then show you them walking up and getting it. There's nothing more to it. There's no skill involved, which is sort of understandable for a game that's aimed at that age group. But at the same time, even they would probably get bored with this, I think. It's just too A to B, then B to A, then you get a cutscene, then A to B, exactly the same. Like with the thing that talks too much that we talked about earlier on, and with you saying about them padding it unnecessarily, there's a bit where it runs amok and you have to go and catch it, isn't there? And then you have to do it 3 times. You catch it and then it just inexplicably jumps out of your hands, and then you have to catch it twice more. And you think, all right, fair enough. And then you have to catch it in various parts of the house. And the worst bit about it is, in terms of like breaking immersion of being in the game, and I know it's probably not important to kids, but I noticed it straight away. You're catching it in this restricted area. So there's like baby gates up around where you're meant to catch this bird. But then as soon as you catch it, it runs off to another room and the baby gates are gone. And it's like, well, if you just left them up, it wouldn't have been able to get out of this room and we'd have had a much easier time of it. So it's just little bits like that that just, it's not, I suppose you don't need continuity in a game that's aimed at like 3-year-olds. But if you're expecting parents to play it as well, like, it wasn't necessary. This is the thing. You could just program that bird to not run out of the room and then not put the barriers up. And then it wouldn't make a difference, would it? You could still go out of it, but the bird's still going to be in there, so you've no reason to. It just baffles me. And the other thing that really annoyed me about it, and it shouldn't do, but it really annoyed me about it, is on the second level. So the second level, you go to the park to meet Uncle Stripe or whatever he's called. And you get to the park, and you come down this path. It quite clearly shows you coming down this path onto this bridge. And the dad goes, oh, where are we meant to meet him? And they're like, oh, the castle or whatever it's called. And they're like, I don't know where that is. And you think, well, one, this is your local park. So how you don't know where something in the park is, but fair enough. So then it's like Bluey goes, oh, let's climb to the highest point of that slide and then we'll be able to see the whole park and know exactly where it is. And they go, yeah, that's a good idea. So you trudge your way up this slide and have a look round. And then Bluey's like, oh, look, over there. And you turn to the bridge that you've literally just walked across and the path you walk down, and it is literally on that path. Like, you couldn't not see it if you were walking down that path. And they're stood there at the entrance of it. And it's like, so did you walk down there blindfold and then go, right, where's this castle I'm looking for then? And it's just bits like that. It wouldn't have took much to just animate some foliage around it so that you couldn't see it when you walked down that path. It's stuff like, and yeah, kids aren't going to notice that, but adults probably are. And then it just, that put my back up a bit then. And I was like, this bloody game. And from that point on, it really had to fight to win me round. And to be fair, at the end of it, I think, like you said, it's quite a wholesome TV show and it does have good, like, messages. And I think the message of the game is really good, because when they find the treasure and it's a bit crap, Bluey's like all gutted, isn't she? And she's like, oh, this has been the worst summer ever. The treasure was a load of rubbish. And then the dad sort of says, well, it's the treasure's not always like gold and riches. It's like the experiences and whatnot. And then it shows Bluey looks at like photos of all the fun they've had on the way and realizes that it's actually been quite a good summer. And I now won't say I was welling up, but it was quite an emotional end to how they like finished it with that story. And I thought, yeah, fair enough. I can see that this would be good for a kid to play, like to get into their first game. My biggest issue with it is the fact that they want 40 quid for it, or they did when it came out, because this is not a £10 game. Like if they release this as a Flash game, I'd go, oh, decent, if Flash was still a thing. But to charge 40 quid for something that you can do everything in 2 hours, and I think I'm being generous with 2 hours, because you could probably do it in an hour and a half. There is literally no content left in this game once you collect all those stickers and you water all the plants and you get your 100% achievement trophy, and that's it. There's not like a sub game. You can go back and play the levels, but I don't know why you'd ever want to. There's not like even, I mean, there's the mini games which we alluded to, but they are not fun. They are like a means to an end during the game, aren't they? And then you're like, oh, you can play this again. It's like, no, thanks. I didn't really want to play it the first time I had to do it, so I don't want to play it again. And there's nothing like, they could have done stuff. They could have easily put in like a, I don't know, like a colouring book where you could colour in the characters, like point and click colour in, and use the stickers that you've unlocked to decorate things. Or you could have put in like a thing where you can arrange the family in the house and take a screenshot of it, or, and it's small stuff, but it's stuff that would keep kids more entertained and coming back, isn't it? And like, you've unlocked those stickers for a reason, because you can now use them on stuff. And there's just none of that. There's no post game whatsoever. And it's just to try and charge 40 quid for that just because it's a license. If this wasn't Bluey and it was just some nondescript characters, this game would be getting absolutely destroyed for what you get in terms of money asked.
Yeah, definitely. I think even if they'd done something with it akin to Sackboy or Little Big Planet, sorry. If they'd done it so there was a use for the hats, an actual, you could, like you say, you could pose in certain levels and you could have, if you could all set your characters into silly poses, because you can take screenshots all the way through the game, but it literally just snapshots. It's like doing a screen grab on a PC. There's no animation in it. It just screen grabs what you are doing. You can't change the filters or the settings or anything like that. You can't pose your characters. It just takes a screen grab of what's on the screen at that time. And if they'd done it so you could dress your characters up and you could sort of like get a fun family photo using like other characters from the series where you could dress up the granddad or something like that, and it was like little Bluey in a granddad outfit sort of thing, and they did that, but like you say, there is, once you get all 100% of the items and you finish the game, that's you done. The mini games are insipid at best. The very first one that they introduce with the Keepy Uppy, where you have to essentially keep a balloon off the floor, and you headbutt it three times, and it goes, "Well done for doing that," and then you move on. It's like, yeah. Oh, is that it? Is that the challenge? I've got to do it three times, and it barely moves anyway. So I just slightly nudge my character actor. And again, come back to, I get that it's for 3-year-olds. However, there's no real need. I mean, if they did the Final Fantasy IX thing, where there's the two kids with the skipping rope in the first level, and you have to jump over it, and you can keep jumping over it, and if you get over 1,000, you get a rare materia or something like that, and you had like a high score table for keepy uppy, or the floor is lava, something to make you keep coming back to something that you've paid 40 quid for. I mean, it is in the PlayStation sale at the minute, and it's $27.99. So how it's they've still got 20 the brass quid
too
neck.
Much. 20 yeah. quid too much still, definitely. I mean, it's free on Game Pass, and I felt like I'd paid too much for it. So that tells you all you really need to know. And the keepy uppy thing, if you play it as a mini game, because I accidentally clicked it and started a mini game, there is genuine skill in that, because the three computer players are less than useless. They never attempt to keep it up, they just get in your way. So there is a little bit of skill there, but it's one of those things that I praised it for a minute ago, in that you've got this multiplayer aspect where the bigger brother or sister and the parents can also join in and take over one of the other characters. So put a little bit of content in for them, or put something in that is a little bit more tricky for them, because no 3 or 4-year-old's going to be sat playing this on their own. There's going to be an adult there. So you could put something in that's a little more difficult, that they might need help from the mum or dad to do. It's okay to do that because you've allowed for it in the multiplayer model of the game. But the multiplayer thing serves no purpose in 90% of the game. Like, the keepy-uppy thing is the only place really I can think, oh, and the bit with the xylophone where you can basically like freeze tag.
Yeah.
That I could see being moderately fun with 4 people. Not for long, but if you've got little kids and you want to play that, that would be quite fun because you can unfreeze people, can't you? So I could see a scenario where the kid's trying to freeze the parents and the parents keep unfreezing each other, and it gets really, not frustrating in a bad way, but you know what I mean? Like, there's some genuine challenge to it. But other than that, there's just nothing to keep you coming back to it. And when you're charging 40 quid or even $27.99 for a game, you should get more than an hour out of it. I mean, think about what you can do for 40 quid with 2 kids. You can do an escape room probably for around that price. Yeah. You can go bowling for, I know bowling's ridiculously expensive for what it is, but you could probably go bowling for 40 quid and get a couple of games in. You could go to the cinema and see a film that lasts longer than this game and get snacks, I would probably throw into the bargain.
I think even stuff like the Lego games, which are ostensibly aimed at younger kids, adults get as much enjoyment out of them as the kids do, because, again, just some of the way they've animated. I mean, Lord of the Rings, they did a Lego version of Lord of the Rings, which isn't a kid's film, because one, it's long, two, it's quite boring as an adult, let alone as a kid, in parts. But it's got that level of adult humour to it, because they're animating and trying to do a rip on a film without the dialogue. So there's that level of humour to it. But there's also the slapstick side of things for the kids. Mm. But kids love the Lego games, and those are worth 40 quid because they are hours long, and there are so many characters to collect. You can, even if you just want to wander around the overworld trying to collect all the studs, despite the fact that the bloody things respawn when you go off camera and come back again, there is a level of, you get your money's worth out of the Lego games. Whereas this, I think it's just a bit of a shameless cash-in, really.
Yeah, it's a nicely done shameless cash-in. It looks lovely. It sounds really good. It's got the writing. I think if they'd have put more effort into it and made it 8 episodes long, you couldn't really argue with it as much. But the fact that it's over in an hour and a half max is the massive sticking point. And to use your example of the Lego games, that is where they've done it for all ages really well, because if you're a 4 or 5-year-old, you can blast through the level from start to finish. There's not that much challenge. There's a couple of pits to jump over. There's a bit of fighting, which if you lose, you just respawn. there's stuff to collect and stuff to look at, and you hit something over here and it makes something go off over there, and there's that interactive element for kids. But they could just fly through it and finish it. But as an adult, you've got the, I want to unlock every character. I want to find every stud in every level and get all the 100% completion. So you've got the same game, but from two different aspects, and both can enjoy it as much as the other. And even together to some extent, because the kid can run off and do what they want to do. You can go and try and collect as much as you can. You'll probably end up in a situation where you can't see either character because you're so far apart. It just cuts you both off the screen. But if you really wanted to, you could. Whereas this is just, the multiplayer characters are superfluous. Your dad can play it with you and your mum can play it with you, but there's no real reason for them to do so because you'll be the one that's doing everything. You'll be the one that's doing the main bit of platforming to turn the sprinklers off or whatever it is, and controlling the dialogue and going and picking up the thing you need to pick up. And it is like you say, it's a cash in, but it's one where it looks like 50% of the team put a load of effort in and then the other 50% just slapped that over something shite and went, there we go, job done.
Yeah, 50% of them had a passion for the project, the other 50% wanted to knock off for an early lunch. It's kind of the gist I'm getting from it. But I think, even to your point, if they'd made it 8 episodes long, but they'd also tacked on each episode, you also got the cartoon version on the disc. So if you were a little kid and you did get bored of it because it's that handholdy or that tedious, you could watch the episodes, and they'd done like 8 exclusive Bluey episodes that were reflective of the storyline in the game. And you could watch them over and over again, because kids like rewatching cartoons and stuff like that, without having to play the Dross main game.
Yeah.
And there's that replayability value for it.
I don't even think they'd have to do exclusives, because I know for a fact, because I Googled it to try and find something in the beach level, and it came up, there is an episode called The Beach. So just put that episode in there, and you've already covered one off. And like you say, that's, I don't know how long Bluey episodes are, but you stick 8 Bluey episodes on there and it suddenly becomes like an extra 2 hours for no extra work. And yeah, they're probably all on streaming services and stuff, but it makes you feel like you're getting something for your money at the very least, rather than just a game that, it's almost like they had that game or the idea of the mechanics of it ready to go and they were just searching for a license to put on it. Because it is just purely like the stickers thing. I don't know about Bluey, but I don't think stickers are a thing in it, are they? So that's, they've just gone, oh, collect these things arbitrarily scattered around the house. And then, like I say, the majority of it is go here and fetch this and bring it back. And I think, like we said, that's where they've really shone, in that the writing for it is brilliant. It's just the thing that they've used the writing to drive you through is nothing. It's a nothing. It may as well be a TV episode, like you said, because you don't do anything particularly fun. You don't do anything that particularly alters the landscape of the game, like the narrative. You're just plodding through an episode. Oh, go over here, do this. Go over here, pick up some litter. And then another annoying point before we finish. Oh, toss this litter in the trash. So I thought, oh, finally the toss mechanism's got a use, because the granddad stood there with a big trash bag open in front of him. I thought, I can pick the litter up and there's a bit of skill here. I have to toss it into the bag. Toss the first item. It hit the top of the trash bag like it was a solid object and just slid off slowly. And I was like, what? And you actually have to pick it up, walk over and press the action button. And then they just place it gingerly in the trash bag. And I was like, that's something you could have actually made fun there, and you've even not bothered to do that. Shall we score it, just for the sake of it? seeing as that's what we do.
Yeah, why not? That's what we do.
I'm going to give it 2 separate scores, because I'm going to give it a score based on how well it portrays the TV show, which I think is in the 80s. I think it's done a really good job of giving you that feeling of the TV show. It's not like a lot of licensed games where it's just a really lazy skin thrown on top of something. There's genuine heart and effort gone into the story, into the character designs, into the locations that you go to, which will be familiar to any kids that have watched the TV show. In terms of the gameplay, it's down in the 30s for me. And that's with the glitches ironed out.
Yeah, I think that's the other thing to take into consideration. We have played this after it's been patched a couple of times. So all of the original glitches and the horrifying fever dreams that the three-year-olds got when they initially opened this at the beginning of the year, yeah, they're all gone. They're all ironed out and it's kink-free now, essentially. So there's no problem. Well, not many problems with it aside from the couple of bits. But yeah, I think you're right. I think in terms of being an accurate portrayal of the TV show and having the same heart and warmth and it just being a continuation of that thing that kids like, it's not, to your point, like those shameless cash-ins that we used to get when it was like, oh, Jesus Christ, this big film's coming out. Someone throw together a shitty platformer and plaster a load of Disney art over the top of it because we know the kids are going to love it. And it was just dross. Like, pure and simple. The graphics weren't great, the gameplay was even worse, and we'd been suckered in because it said The Lion King on it.
Yeah.
And we all liked to be fair, King at the time.
The Lion King games were good, so that's a poor example.
But
the one I can think of is, top of my head, was, did you ever play Mick and Mac Global Gladiators? Which was a McDonald's game. That didn't need to be in any way, shape, or form a McDonald's game. The only McDonald's aspects were you collected little M's and Ronald McDonald was stood quite creepily at the end of each level, beckoning you in when you got there. And that is a prime example of a game where they'd made a game which wasn't terrible, to be fair to it, and gone, this ain't going to sell. We need a license on it. Oh, McDonald's, what are you doing? And they just slapped that on and did a little cutscene at the beginning and stuck Ronald at the end of each level. And that is the only McDonald's link in the whole game. And that's what we had to put up with a lot of the time, wasn't it? That was a lot of licensed games for us. It was a game that somebody already had ready to go. And they just slapped a license over the top of it to try and make it loosely fit. And then us as kids went, oh, I like that thing. I'm going to get this game. And then it was something completely different. So yeah, I think, like you were saying, they didn't do that, at least, which is commendable. You've got to give them that.
And then to sour the experience, really. I don't know who it's aimed at. The controls aren't great. The mini games are asinine at best. It's too handholdy, but at the same time, if you took away the handholdy side of things, you wouldn't have a clue what was going on. So I do not know who this game was intended for, but it's not who they think it's intended for. It is not intended. It's not aimed at three-year-olds, and it's not aimed at adults. It's not aimed at a combination of the two. It's just some mythical target audience that won't play this game.
And I wonder how well it has actually sold.
Well, to put it this way, so in terms of ratings, IGN have given it a 4 out of 10, and to be honest with you, I couldn't give a shit about what IGN says about a video game, to be quite frank. 56% on Metacritic, and again, 7 out of 10 on Steam, and I am assuming that is people doing it ironically.
Yeah, I mean, it's a hard one to judge, because like we said, if you're judging it on the heart of it, and the enjoyability of the story, yeah, it's quite high. But other than that, no, I just don't. I mean, I'm just looking at this, so I've found some sales and statistics, but they're very, very vague. So it's made 300K in sales, apparently, and 8,000 people own it. 20,000 people had it on their wish list when it launched, but it doesn't say what wish list, so like Steam, maybe. Could be Amazon, not sure. But only 29% of those people actually bought it within 30 days after release. I don't think it's done badly, to be fair, by the sounds of it.
No, and that's not including the people like us who've downloaded it on
For free.
Game
yeah.
Pass for a laugh.
It's a strange one, isn't it? I just, like you say, the target market for it is, we know what the target market should be, and the game that we've played does not hit that demographic very well, I'd say. I genuinely think 3- and 4-year-olds would get more enjoyment out of watching an adult play it and just enjoying it for what it is, as like a cartoon, than the actual frustration of having to control it and play it yourself. And yeah, there's nice little bits in there, but overall, we've put far too much effort into reviewing a game for toddlers that cost 40 quid. I mean, this might be the most in-depth review of a game we've ever done in 50-odd episodes. But there you go. We've scored it. I gave it, what, like 80s and then 30s. So you level it out, you get into the sort of 50, 60s mark, aren't you? I don't know if you feel a similar way.
Yeah, I completely, wholeheartedly agree. It is a shame for the target audience that it could have been something great. And if they'd put as much effort into the gameplay side of things as they did into every other aspect of the game, because it is dripping with enthusiasm from the team that made it, you can obviously see there is a lot of, again, heart gone into it, right down to how well it animates and stuff like that. But if they just put more than a lunchtime's worth of effort into how the story and how are we going to make this game last 4 or 5 hours, I think it'd have been something great for the kids.
Or at the very least, put some post-game into it. Just simple stuff, colouring books, sticker albums that you can actually interact with, that kind of thing would have been a nice little addition. But yeah, it's just, it is, I think the best way to sum it up is a bit of a cash grab, but a cash grab with heart at the same time.
Yeah.
And with that out of the way, we will get on to the patron shout outs, because I think we've gone too long on an episode of Bluey and Turrican, if I'm quite honest. Nobody foresaw that being as long as it's been. Patron shout outs, we've got in the couple of coins tier, we have got Harry Flynn. In the Bucket Kicker tier, we've got Ric Flair. And in the Avatarnish tier, we've got the Sweaty Llama. So thank you to you guys. If you want to help keep us in toddler games and playing stuff like this, you can go to patreon.com/bucketlistgamers, sign up yourself. There's still an exclusive episode on there until, well, it'll probably have moved over by the time you're listening to this, because we're a little bit behind because we spent that hour playing Bluey. But as well as that, we do have another Patreon exclusive episode coming up soon, which I can't say when it'll be on there. It just depends when I get it edited. But yeah, we will we'll have something new and exclusive on there soon as well. And then, of course, in perpetuity, the clip of Eddie being spooked by a noise will be on there exclusively for Patreons forevermore. And that's the only place you can listen to it. And I'm amazed that no one's signed up to hear that yet. I thought people would be signing up in their droves to hear that clip. So I'm a little bit disappointed. But there you go. And unless you've got anything else from the gaming world or anything you want to cover, I think we're about done.
No, I think everything else. I wasn't expecting the episode to run on this long, to be quite frank with you. So I think before we depress the viewers or listeners any further, probably save the rest of it till next time. Thank you for listening. The Patreons will either go to maintaining the channel or getting us the help we obviously sorely need.
I need another bottle of what I've just had in that glass, I think, to get through if we have to play any more like that. But we've got two games coming up that we actually do like, so we can, I mean, bit of a spoiler, there's things we don't like about them as well, but on the whole we can at least say stuff about them. So we've got two jam-packed episodes no doubt coming up, so I think this is probably a good time to say before we go that we just want to thank everyone again for listening. Patreons, non-Patreons, everybody else. We're still blown away by how many people do listen to it. We're still enjoying doing it, despite how you might think we feel after today's episode and the fact we've got these two other books looming in the distance. But we are still loving doing it. And in all honesty, I was laid in bed the other night thinking, what the hell are we going to do for an hour every week once these books have run out? Yeah. We'll have to start coming up with some content plans now, I think, for, unless you just want to hear us ramble about inane things. But to be fair, that's what we've been doing for the last year. So and people are still listening, so I'm sure we'll be fine. But yeah, thank you very much for listening over the last year. And as we close in on the finish line, or at least the first finish line of many, I think it is worth saying that we do appreciate every listen we get. And while you're waiting for new episodes, you can always go and re-listen to the back catalogue. There's that many episodes now, I'm sure you've forgotten some of them. So go back and listen to us moan about other rubbish games that have made the list, or in contrast to that, the games we actually did enjoy, because there were a few in there scattered through, I think, weren't there?
There were, and it has been a privilege to do this. It's not everyone that gets to do this sort of thing, really. You have to want to do something like that, and B, have the slightly disposable income to be able to just afford to put aside an hour a week. Other people yeah. have kids, don't have the opportunity. So yeah, it is a privilege to do stuff like this with a friend and just do it for the laugh, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
And get some enjoyment out of it.
Yeah, we don't need your Patreon money, but we bloody appreciate it when it comes in, because
we do.
it helps us keep things running. I know we talk about frivolously spending it on toddler games and Pokemon cards every week, but we do genuinely use it to pay for the hosting, pay for the recording software, pay for bits and bobs that we need to try and make this a better listen for you guys, because listen back to some of the earlier episodes earlier in the week, and yeah, they did sound a lot rougher. I mean, they're not amazing now. It's not like I'm sat in an Eggbox line studio or anything, but I think they do genuinely sound a little bit better these days. We are constantly striving to make it the best we can do for people that listen. So yeah, any money that comes our way, we really appreciate, and we don't take it for granted, and we genuinely don't mean it when we sort of make the jokes about people who wait being tight and all that stuff. If that's what you want to do, you are more than welcome to that. We honestly don't mind. We're just glad that people want to listen. So thank you again to everyone who has. And I think we need to stop it there, because that drink genuinely has gone to my head and I'm feeling a bit lightheaded. I won't be playing any more Bluey tonight, that's for certain.
Yes.
So I will say that's goodbye from me.
And that's goodbye from me.
And maybe in series two we can work on doing endings better. Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye.